Dr. Windrum, Reel 3.
Well, the town of Montpellier was only a few miles from the sea, one of us, but I couldn't afford to go there, so I didn't go very often. And I didn't have much time to study either, but I began to be interested in the bit of clinical teaching we had at the beds of the hospital. And so it went on. I was so hard down sometimes that I couldn't have enough money to buy a stamp to write a letter. My mother was always concerned about me, and I wrote every week a letter to her. I didn't see her for 3 years. But I began to earn a bit more. And in 1935, this girlfriend of mine was, her parents were in Paris. They moved from Poland. My father didn't do too badly, but she traveled. There were two of them, her friends she brought from Poland. But she came for a few months and she went back to Paris. But we were friendly. And she said, well, I've got a job here. I can help you a bit, so you might be able to go and see your parents. Well, I was a bit, oh yes, I forgot to tell you. When I went the second time back home from France, I mentioned 1932. You see, after I passed, that was the first time. No, the second time, but I didn't have any money. I got to Vienna, I didn't have any more money to go home. So I went to my aunt, who was my father's sister. They said, can you give me some money, lend me some money to go home? That was in 1932. So she had to go to a neighbor and borrow some money. I got on a train, but when I came to Krakow, which is not far from the border, but I had no more money. How do I get home? There's another few hundred miles. So there were some very nice people there in the department, the train. So I think it was only a matter of 7 or 8 zlotys. It wasn't much, but I didn't have a penny. And I think one or two people gave me 1 or 2 zlotys. Then there was a Jewish artist, I think, who was playing in Jewish theaters. He lent me 5 or 6 zlotys. It was just enough to get home. That's why I was so nervous going back. I could have been stuck in Vienna and Krakow, not a thing. I went with my passport saying, I'll leave you the passport and send me back. But I didn't. So I had to put myself in university for the next 3 years. I managed to go home. That was the last time I saw my parents. I was 1935. I stayed 2 months. Then my girlfriend sent me the money and I went back. I passed very easily my exams. And I went back to the same routine. Cinema. Restaurant. I did other jobs. As time went on, and I can't get to go too much into details, I have to start to think about my future. Well, of course, my parents thought, when I finish, I'll come back. It would take 2 or 3 years to take the exam in Polish. But of course, I never dreamt about going back to Poland. The world was big. I also didn't think about staying in France, which was very difficult anyway. I liked the country, but you'd have to take all the exams again, and it was very difficult.
Why would you have to take all the exams again?
Because they didn't want any foreigners to be doctors. Mind you, quite a few of my friends did it. They stayed there. But I wanted, well, it went on for years. I did all sorts of jobs. And I started writing, I want to go to the Congo. I wasn't finished yet. I wrote, I said, I'm prepared to go to Congo. It's a Belgian colony then. Well, they said, you have to come and take a 2-year exam here about tropical medicine. But that was beyond that. And I was just thinking where to go. So I started to write to my uncle in America. At that time, I already worked in a mental clinic as a, I don't know what to say, not really as a doctor, but as a do-it-all, watched over the patient, private mental clinic. And I began to be interested in psychiatry, because I read quite a lot. And then, about 38, I think, you know, that was, I started writing for my uncle in America. You have to have a, what you call it, a special thing guaranteeing if you wanted to emigrate to the States. Now, if you were British or French, you could get this permission and you could go to America straight away. But as you were Polish, you had to wait 2 years. After many, many months, writing eventually my uncle, that was about 3 months before the war broke out, my uncle sent me an agreement that he would guarantee my financial. And I said, because if I get to America, I can get a job straight away. So I went to the consulate in Marseille, and I could speak English, and I got, I don't know what you call it, a special paper which would entitle me to emigrate to America. But the waiting list would be 2 years, which didn't bother me at all because I was already doing jobs at a mental private clinic called Verbois. It doesn't exist anymore. I'm not really telling you the story, but and I thought, well, 2 years, fantastic, I don't mind. I had all sorts of jobs, looking after old people, from the mentally ill, looking in the home, watching over suicidal. And I knew that the war was going to break out. Eventually, just before the war, I was already finished. All I had to do was just write my thesis and take the final exam. Well, I decided to write a nice thesis, which would then take me about 6 months. It's about some mental illness. But then I got a job just about 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the war started. I was looking in that private clinic after an old boy. It was all night. He was excited to me. I didn't sleep. It didn't bother me. At 5 or 6 in the morning, down. Well, he happened to be the father of a woman whose husband was one of the richest men in the southern, richest wine merchants, sells the south of France. And I got on with that boy very well, and he liked me. Well, she only paid me 30 francs, the woman who owned, she exploited us. I says, are you willing to come and look after him? Man house. I said, of course. And they said, it's 100 francs a day, which was a fortune to me. The old woman, but I only could do the job about a fortnight. Well, I was treated there really extremely well, not used to such luxury. And the other, he was the father of the wife of the old house. And I said, there's going to be a war in a few days, in a few weeks or two. He says, you're talking nonsense. The stock market has never been so well off. I thought, how naive can you get?
Where was the house?
The house was about 30 or 40 kilometers from Montpellier, inside, towards northwest of France. And then I went for a week to stay with the old boy and his other daughters. And if the war wouldn't have broken out, I could have earned in 6 months enough to get me to America when the time came, which was to take it anyway, another 2 years or 18 months. So the war broke out.
Excuse me.
I had to leave a week before this very good job. But I went back to the clinic, and the war broke out on the 1st, and England declared the war on the 3rd, I think. But I was very doubtful about the French, because they'd lost an awful lot of men in the First World War. And there were a lot of immigrants, Italian on the east, southeast, Spaniards on the southwest, and a lot of Poles in the northwest, mostly working in the fields and in the factories. So when the war broke out, I knew there's going to be a war. I was rather impressed when I saw Chamber. Oh yes, I must tell you another thing which I forgot. I had some admiration for the British. I never in my life met an Englishman. But there was something about Britain and the British that fascinated me. So much so that they called me Sir Edmund, my friends, and say, Viceroy of India. I don't think I ever met an Englishman. But I did admire the country. Some I didn't know the country except the language. And then when England declared the war, it was on the 3rd. Within a week, I volunteered to join the French army. And then I was told, and Poland, that was already 2 or 3 weeks in the beginning of the war, and Poland was already beaten. And when I volunteered to join the Polish army, I was told...
The French army.
The French army, I was told, sorry, I was told that it's going to be a Polish army in France. So you wait till you are called up. Now, I was very far from enthusiastic to join the Polish army, but there's nothing else I could do. So I took my final exams, which I passed very easily. I changed my thesis, which I wrote in 3 weeks. I still got one there somewhere upstairs. And I became a doctor professional. I had a little party, like always, you know. And I still worked at nights in that private clinic as a caretaker. Well, just an intern, which means, you know, still doctor. Well, they did form an army, but it took months. So it was, and I had another girlfriend there, whom I met in. She wanted to get married, fortunately, she was. They didn't call me up till somewhere in February 1940 to this Polish army in France, which was in the northwest of France. Well, I knew what to expect. So half, more than half of the soldiers were the ones who lived in France and worked mostly on farms and fields and factories. And quite a few managed to get food from Poland, including the officers. Somehow they managed to. Hungary, I don't know how. Well, I wasn't very keen on the whole thing because it brought back memories of I left the country 10 years ago and didn't ever want to go back. Well, I was made an ordinary soldier, like everybody else. He gave us rifles from the First World War. I've still got the photograph, I can show it. And one more intelligent soldier Mind you, I was the only Jew there, and they didn't know. It wouldn't be for my name. I didn't particularly look at it, they didn't know, but then it came out. And once one of the soldiers was a student from the same town, from Ruf, he said, "You really a doctor? Will you ask to be employed as a doctor?" So when we were standing in the colonel, I moved out and I said, "I'm a doctor, can I be?" Because I was told that I will be sent to the, what do you call it? It's not nursing, the nursing place for real soldiers. He told me off in front of you. We've got solicitors, we've got engineers. An ordinary soldier, you can be an ordinary soldier. I thought he's right. I went back and I never did it again. But there's a very, very long story about the fighting. I can't go into the details because I'd go on for a long time. Eventually, I got into a company whose captain was called Utovsky. And he came up through the ranks. He wasn't a I think a sergeant or something, and became a captain. And then, of course, for several months there wasn't much fighting till they decided to attack France, which was, I think, the 10th of May, 1940.
1940, yes.
And all we really had was old rifles, and he moved us around, and then they said for several weeks when I was moved, then they suddenly decided I have to be a doctor and gave me a lot of things to carry, and then they gave us, they said, then I can't go into the details because I spent probably an hour or two there in the But we were not far away with the goal, the degrees, not far from the Swiss border, and the Germans were coming. So they gave us bottles of petrol. If you see a tank, try to get to the side and throw it at the wheel, and that'll blow up the tank. Well, as it happens, I never came across a tank, and I don't think anybody did. It's hardly a way to fight a tank. I remember one day, the captain had a weakness for me because he had some of the inferiority complex, having risen from the, not having risen professionally, but from the ranks. I was lying there, and I saw a German plane. I was going to shoot at it. I thought I might blow it. I mean, with that rifle, I wouldn't do much. And he saw me and he started shouting at me. "Don't you dare to do that." All right. Leaving me, they bombed the village nearby. Then we were in the hatch. We had shooting left, right, and center. And we were in the middle without knowing who and where we were. Then we went. And the captain said, "Well, you don't seem to be worried." You know, he was nervous. I said, "No, if I got to die, I'll die. Nothing we can do." Then they put us on, Italy declared the war, I think, on the 10th of July. And they put us on a train, and I thought, "Oh, good, we're going down south." But no, all it took us an whole day. We got to about 20 or 30 miles. And of course, I suddenly started to notice French officers running away back, and soldiers. So I saw that it was lost. And I picked up 6 rifles, because I wasn't pleased with them. Eventually, the captain told me to go on a lorry, and there were 3 or 4 soldiers. He got lost, and he nearly thought he would go into the south. But eventually, we managed to get in touch again with our regiment. And I could see that the war was lost. Then we stopped at the village, I think it was the 19th of July. There was a speech by the tank, which I heard on the radio. And then there were a few Frenchmen there. They said, can't exactly remember the words. I said, what do you? We've lost the war. It's no use. And the tank did ask for things. So I thought, well, what's going to happen now? So we went on for another day or two, and suddenly I saw some lights. We were on the Swiss border. And we went into Switzerland. The whole division was allowed to go into Switzerland. We stayed there on the border. I didn't have a penny. We stayed there on the border a few days. Then they moved us into the center. The regiment was located in three villages, and we were located in a village called Bettenhausen. There were about 40 of us. Oh, there was a school. There were about 40 or 50 lying in one room on the floor. And the captain needed me because he couldn't speak the Swiss. Soldiers, the Swiss, well, the soldiers, sergeants, how would you call them, non-commissioned, spoke either German or French. Well, I spoke both languages with the captain. I was the only one. There was another Jew who came later. They were of course, they started their anti-Semitic comments. And I said, well, the captain was pleased, and he said, well, I don't know, I think we'll spend the war here. Well, I was astonished by the friendliness of the Swiss. I could tell them as much. I still got my hand after the war, still alive. I went into a pump, and there was somebody sitting there. Swiss, and I spoke to him in German. He was a teacher called Leist. And then I said, did you want to speak French? He said, I can't speak French. I said, oh, well, I can read Shakespeare in English. And he was fascinated. And you know, while I was 10 years in France, I was only invited to one, which I mentioned later, to one house. No, I didn't particularly miss it, but this teacher said, you have to come to me. Well, we were in the school, actually. The children were removed. We were lying on the main hall on the floor, and he was on the first floor.
Which town is this?
That was Bettenhausen, the village. Not in the center of Switzerland. I became friendly with this teacher. He left me the key. He must have a bath. Then I was friendly with another family. Eventually, after a few months, the doctor, there were three villages nearby, and each had a lot of Polish soldiers. And the village next to it was the doctor of the regiment, or the doctor, Kovnitz, was still alive.
Oh, I've interviewed him.
You went to him? Well, I'll tell you about that. I only got to know because we were here in England. He wasn't, we had nothing to do with each other. Did you see him?
About 2 weeks ago.
Did he give you a history of it?
His own history, yes.
Well, we didn't have much to do, but we just happened to end up in the same town in England. I don't know if he mentioned me to you.
I can't remember.
I shouldn't think so. Mind you, he's 90. And I was invited to houses, and I really never seen such friendliness anywhere in France. But of course, I had my girlfriend who was writing, and I told her when she was killed back to France. But that wasn't easy. After a few months, Itzky said he did it, but it wasn't. The captain needed me because of language, and he had confidence in me. He couldn't do much, he couldn't talk to the Swiss. I had to sometimes be an interpreter between the Swiss, the German, and the French. Lice could only speak German, he could speak, because normally they had four languages, Italian, kind of Italian. And he decided, somebody said that they were nice in this company. And the captain got angry, and they made me a doctor. Although I was only a lance corporal. So I got a room in the post office. I could show you the photo. Mind you, there wasn't much medicine. I was a doctor. I was still thinking all the time I was escaping back to France, but if you were caught, it would be finished. And it was far away from the border. Now we stayed there. I've never seen such rangers in France, so I can bet you know. And I still find it now, the one who's alive. The family was called Adam. His mother, Mrs. Adam, was extremely nice, and the sister, Clara, never found such friendliness in France. And then, after a few months, they moved the company to Pfeffikon somewhere. And the captain said, well, you'll be here till the end of the war. Oh, yes. So I said, well, if I'm here, they started opening kind of schools for the soldiers who were students. And one was a medical. Well, I thought, I'll apply for it. I'm just the right person, you know, as an assistant.
Were you an internee?
Of course. It was a uniform. All the time when I was in soldiers. But my captain wanted me and he didn't let me go. And a month later, he went himself somewhere else. So I said, look, because I would have probably stayed in Switzerland if I would have got the job, which I didn't get. And we were moved very soon to another place. There was a camp. I wasn't anymore a doctor. And we're doing odd jobs. Quite a few anti-Semitic remarks. And I remember once I got into a conversation with an intelligent man. We talked about quite a few things, and then we suddenly finished. It was anti-Semitic. I said, oh my God, am I going back to that again? So, while we were in Bettenhausen, I used to help the secretary of the town with his work, with his paperwork. So I asked if he would help me to help him, because I had physical work with wood and